This is The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to a special bonus episode of The Guardian Football Weekly, an interview with Mladen Bartolovic. He's the assistant coach of the top flight Ukrainian side, Inulets Petrovie. A Croat who moved to Ukraine when he was 19. He's lived there since 2006. He's currently in Dnipro and is safe. Nick Ames originally interviewed him and four Ukrainian players. Mladen has very kindly agreed to speak to us for the pod. We felt it was important to hear his story. This is The Guardian Football Weekly. Joining me and Barry. Hello, Barry, by the way.
Hi, Max.
Is Nick Ames. Hi, Nick.
Thank you very much, Max. Hello.
Yeah, after we hear from Mladen, we'll chat to Nick a bit about the process of getting a story like this out there and getting in touch with people in Ukraine. But here is Mladen's story. Well, first of all, thank you so much for talking to us. We really appreciate your time in what is clearly an impossibly difficult situation. Most importantly, are you safe right now?
Yes, the situation in my city is quiet. It's normal now in Dnipro. It's 200 kilometers from Donetsk, from Kharkov, Mariupol, 250. And in our region, it's very quiet situation. Of course, it's a panic by the people, understand? Because it's near to us and it's crazy what's happening. It's a big shock. All people go to the west of Ukraine and go to Poland, Romania.
Mm-hmm. And how's the last week or two been?
We was flying from Turkey from our preseason. And we fly in the 1 o'clock in the night to Kiev and go to our hotel and go sleep, of course, because we have a game in 2 days against Dynamo Kiev. We was preparing for this. And in the morning, 4 or 5 in the morning, start this bombing. And we was all in the hotel and in the morning came all to the reception. And nobody can believe that's happening in Ukraine, that Putin make this, like Hitler in 8 years ago. It was a crazy situation and everybody was in the biggest panic in their life. I saw the faces of the guys and it's crazy.
What happened after that? How did you get out of Kyiv?
We was make a plan how to go from Kyiv because everybody knows that Kyiv is the first option of Putin, yes, that he won't take Kyiv. And first was that the whole team won't go from Kyiv to other cities. And so the club bus of our team came to Kyiv. It was possible in this time. And we go to the, who want to go to our city near to Dnipro here. And we go there by the bus. Some people stay, some players stay in Kyiv, go on the next day. Foreign players try to go to Lviv and to Poland to fly home. And now I know that all our foreign players are at home. Two Holland players and all guys are at home.
I was really moved by Nick's piece and the last line, and I appreciate it's odd to read your words back to you, but you said, "This is the third war of my life and I'm still only 35. I was 5 when the Yugoslavian war began. I still feel the impact on my family. I was here in Ukraine when war began in the Donbass in 2014. Now we're going through this. When I think about it too much, I just don't know what to say." How do you explain it to your, because you have family, you have your daughter. How do you explain what's happening? How do you explain that?
I try don't explain what is this, because we are a little bit out of the city and we don't listen to these sirens when it's a bombing warning, yes? But she is also 10 years old now and she understands a lot of this and also reads in the internet, but we try that she don't read a lot of about this.
Give us an idea of, you know, what your life in Ukraine was like before this happened. You mentioned the other war in 2014. But aside from that, your normal life of you know, being a footballer and being a football coach.
It was normal life the last 8 years. Okay, of course, economic situation was wasn't good first years in Ukraine, but now the last few years was stabilization of everything. But now this again, I don't know what will be with Ukraine in the future. The most important that European countries help Ukraine and that Ukraine go to Europe, it's my opinion.
I don't know if you've seen any of the gestures in English football, you know, the Ukrainian flags, the scarves, I mean, all over the world as well. I just wonder if that, does that mean anything to you and to people in Ukraine?
Of course, this is nice for Ukrainian people, but all people support us. But I think the most important support we wait from NATO, that he closed the sky. This is the most important support for Ukraine in this time now, I think. Of course, this is very nice what all football countries make for Ukraine, and this they make also big money for Ukraine in some actions for take money for Ukraine, humanitarian actions to help Ukrainian people.
And how important do you think it is for people? We have listeners all over the world. How important is do you think it is for them to hear stories like yours?
I don't know. Maybe for a lot of people, I think, who support Ukraine, it's good to hear about this, that this situation. That's, it's better that don't happen, this situation. Don't listen about this, I think.
I think it's so important, personally. I mean, speaking from my position here, I mean, as Mladen knows, I spoke to quite a few people, and he helped me get in touch with people as well. And I got the impression that in the end, about 100 people could have talked for this, and that every single person said to me afterwards, make sure you tell this story, make sure that it comes out, and please keep talking about it. And I think if people are saying that to me as a journalist and to us as journalists, then we have to listen, and we have to listen for as long as they tell us, because that's our job and that's our responsibility. So I think the most powerful way to answer that question is just to tell you what people have said to me, which is keep telling the story.
Mladen, Oleksandr Zinchenko and other Ukrainian football players have said they're disappointed that their Russian football players, international players, haven't come out and criticised Putin. I guess they're scared to, but has that disappointed you?
Of course, this is the most disappointing thing in this situation, that footballers are like a big family, understand? But Russian players, they are not now in our family, because nobody speak about this. It is a war. And I write to some players, Croatian, who play in Russia, why you don't speak about the war? Nobody answer me, because they are scared to speak about this.
And that's why I was just wondering. Obviously, you know so many footballers across Ukraine, and every club has a different situation financially. And I know that at the moment the priority is more somebody's life than their job or something like this. But from talking to people, how much are they worried about the support they're getting or will get from their clubs to be able to feed their families and carry on, you know, living and for their career going forward?
Of course, this is important that the clubs support players and families. But now nobody know which club in Ukraine will play, will be in the league after the war. This is the disappointing thing in this situation. Nobody don't know what will be with Chernigov, Desna, Mariupol, two clubs in Kharkiv. It's big clubs for Ukraine, and nobody know what. I don't speak about the clubs in first division. It's in smaller cities that also in this situation. A lot of players will lose jobs, and it will be dangerous situation of difficult. But I hope that maybe UEFA, the chance to Ukrainian players go to Europe, that they don't be a foreign players like in Poland, that they have a status like Polish players, and a lot of players can go to play to Slovakia, Romania. In this situation, I hope UEFA will make something like this.
I'm just wondering when you're talking to your teammates now on WhatsApp or Telegram or however you communicate, what kind of conversation is it? Are you checking in every hour, every half hour, saying, are you guys okay? Are the other coaches okay? Is everyone fine? Or are you trying to keep the chat more normal? Are you sharing news and images from the war? What kind of conversation do you have at the moment?
Yeah, in the morning, every morning I try to write, how are you guys? How is in your city's quiet situation? Of course, if some important news or something, we send to the group and speak about this. We speak only about war, not football. Football is now not in our minds.
And Mladen, have any of the players you coach taken up weapons and joined the fight?
Look, now the situation in the cities where they live, somebody, also in my small village where I am now, they make like territorial defending groups, yeah? And maybe somebody go to these groups. I go, for example, in my village also to this group, and we go in the night, 2 hours in groups with weapons and like security in our... And also in other cities, it's like this. All Ukrainian people make a big mobilization now, and it's crazy how they... Putin make Ukraine more...
United?
Yeah, united, yeah.
So you've been going out at night time to help to make defenses?
Yeah, last night I was from 3:30 to the 6 in the morning with some guys. Yeah, it was quiet and... For me, something new, but we want to save our families.
Yeah. Does it? I mean, it just feels so far away. Like, I think that's an important thing for all of us, I think. When we looked at, you know, the fact that in Ukraine it was, you know, men aged 18 to 60 who weren't allowed to leave, and you think that's me and my friends, that's us, this could be us. How does it feel to walk around in the middle of the night holding a weapon? I mean, that is not, you're a football coach, you know, this is a different world, right?
And it's never been like this in my life, but it was first time in this situation, and after this I feel like better inside me, understand? After when this finished and I came home, everything was good and I feel better after this.
Well, Mladen, thank you so much for coming on and telling your story. We appreciate it greatly. If we can keep in touch with you, we'd love to.
No problem.
You know, I mean, we just send you all of our best, and our heart breaks for Ukraine and feel totally helpless, and sending best wishes feels quite hollow, but we really mean it.
Thank you to all guys, and I hope it's... in a few days finish this war and we can make this again and speak about football.
We love that. Thank you, Mladen. Nick, I mean, it's so hard for us to conceive of what that situation must be. From a sort of journalistic perspective, you mentioned it briefly there, but how do you go about writing a piece like that and finding the people who will talk and getting them to talk?
I had contact with one player in the first instance whose name is Yevgeny Budnik, and you can read a bit of his story in the piece that went out at the weekend. And he actually is not in Ukraine at the moment. He's in Turkey with Karpaty Lviv on a pre-season, well, a mid-season camp that is now continuing indefinitely, unfortunately for them, because they can't go back to Ukraine. So he was telling me a lot about his situation, for example. His family from Kharkiv and have been involved in a quite awful situation. Like this, as we've seen, there's a lot of shelling and bombing going on in Kharkiv. His own apartment in Kharkiv was shelled and the windows smashed in. And he told me yesterday, fortunately, that he managed to get his family out and they were traveling to Lviv. But basically, I spoke to him and I actually got hold of Mladen through another contact of mine who knew somebody at his club. But everybody who I spoke to, basically, I said, and my colleague Larissa, who I have to mention, who played a 50-50 part in this piece, she was fantastic. We asked if they knew one or two other people who would speak, and everyone did. And to be honest, this could have been a collage of 100 voices, and I wish it had been, and I wish it still could, and still could be, because you know these are human beings. We talk about footballers, but it's human voices, these, who happen to be involved in football to a level where luckily we're able to convey their voices through what we do. And that's the most important thing here. But this could have run on and on, this piece. I didn't really contact anyone or get in touch with anyone who would not have spoken about what they're experiencing.
And there's such a danger, isn't there? And I'm sure, you know, I say this and we may be guilty of it. You know, we may not do another piece like this during the war. We may, but at some point it falls down the news cycle. You know, we have a role to play. Obviously, people listen to us because they want, you know, us talking about draft excluders and half volley and overhead kicks and et cetera, et cetera. So to find that balance, to keep remembering that there are people experiencing this, just feels so important to me.
Yeah, it's a balance, and you know, I mean, we spoke yesterday for a different show, and I was at Euston Station about to go to Watford v Arsenal, which by the way was a great game in the end. But look, I'm not suffering anything here, but it's a mental challenge going from all this to then reporting on the 90 minutes of a football match, which frankly don't seem especially important. But you know, sport still has an important role to play for people as a diversion, as entertainment, as something to take their minds away from things that are going on. We saw that during the pandemic a lot, for example, and I think that was highly valid. So I think there's got to be both. We've got to be, you know, fine, we're reporting on and talking about the guys who are very lucky that they can kick a ball, that they can do what they love for a living, and also that they know they're still going to get paid to do it, which most of these guys in Ukraine, the longer this goes on, they will not know that. But I think it's our responsibility also to make sure that the voices of footballers who, yeah, do not have that luxury and in an absolutely perilous situation now are still heard. So I think the two can live together, is what I'm saying, if that makes sense.
Do you want to mention anyone else from the piece? Because everybody had a moving story.
There was a guy called Nika Sitchinava, who actually my colleague Larissa interviewed, and then I translated. So that was the process for that piece. And he plays for Kolos Kovalivka, who are from a side quite near Kiev. And he lives, I think, just on the outskirts of Kiev. And basically, when obviously on that awful Thursday morning the attacks started and it was clear there was a war going on, he packed up his car with his pregnant wife and kid and waited for a few teammates to come along, put them in with him, and a few others came too. And the long and short of it is that in a location that quite rightly is not being disclosed, there is a village somewhere where in a big basement, and again, if anyone clicks on the piece, then they'll see a video that the Nika sent us. There's a basement which is full of Kolos Kovalivka players, Ukrainian top flight this is, and their family and kids and friends of theirs. And it's heartbreaking, especially when you see the children, you know. Unfortunately, their club is being excellent. They're providing food and water, and the club president is really standing beside them. And you know, in terms of a football club, it's a team effort. But I've heard of other players around Ukraine who are not quite so lucky, and whose football clubs have basically, you know, and this is understandable because all bets are off in this situation. How do you prepare for it? But I think quite a few clubs have been like, well, we just don't know what to do here. Sorry, guys. And I mean, what can you do? It's all so unforeseen and so unpredictable. And there'll be some organisations that are better able to help and protect their employees than others, because that's just the nature of things.
Nick, thanks so much for coming on. Thanks for doing the report, because it is brilliant and it's really important work. And we'll keep in touch, obviously. And you know, if anyone else really wants to tell their story, we will definitely use our platform to get those stories out.
Thank you, Max.
Thanks, Barry.
You're welcome.
And we'll be back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.
Hello, Guardian columnist Jonathan Friedland here. I now have my own US politics podcast, which is, helpfully, called Politics Weekly America. So if you want to hear my interviews with politicians like Hillary Clinton, or expert analysis from Guardian journalists, and the latest news from Washington, D.C. and beyond, you should subscribe. To do that, just type Politics Weekly America into Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be there every Friday.